morning. Tuesday morning, the third day of October 2023. My name is Chad Holmes, sitting in today for Pack Right Low. It's Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, stations throughout the state of Wisconsin. You can normally hear me on Bow Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. BowFallsRadio.com and on the Civic Media app. I have a daily program from 8 until 10 a.m. And once I'm done here with this hour, you can either tune in if you're in central Wisconsin or check me out on the web or on the app as well. And again, welcome to all of our stations, including here in Wausau, Bow Falls Radio. We got WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, stations in Madison, Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Oshkosh, Racine, Richland Center, Amory, and Hayward. Feeling a little nervous just hearing all those stations, and glad to be with you and glad you could join me early on this Tuesday morning. Coming up, we will talk a little bit about high school sports, talking about, I think, a little bit of an epidemic of forfeits in high school football, some thoughts on some changes in high school basketball being proposed with Civic Media's Jimmy Cuska, veteran broadcaster, also now an assistant football coach at Bosco Bell. So we'll talk to Jimmy Cuska coming up just after 7:15, just after we have our daily update from Weatherology and Jennifer Vuchiski. She'll be joining us coming up in just a little bit as well at 7:15. But as I said, it is the 3rd of October of 2023, and looking at some of the famous events that occurred on this date in history. And this one is one of my favorites. I had to mention this because I think I have seen every episode of this show, at least the black and white episodes, many, many times. I've even seen some of the color episodes. Not as good, though. The Andy Griffith Show. And on this date, October the 3rd of 1960, that is 63 years ago today, Andy Griffith, Don Knotts, Ronnie Howard, they premiered The Andy Griffith Show. It lasted 8 seasons, continues today in reruns, and I still probably watch it multiple times a week. And one of my all-time favorite shows. So Andy Griffith Show, happy birthday, 63 years ago today, one of the great shows of all time. Also, famous day, I bet you remember this one, 1995. The Juice, O.J. Simpson, was found not guilty of the murders of his ex-wife Nicole and her friend Ronald Goldman. An estimated 107 million people watched TV news coverage of the verdict. Simpson was later found liable in a civil trial. Also, this one I recall when this happened. It was a real, you know, it was scary because it was a great entertainer who got nearly killed. On this date in 2003, Roy Horn of Siegfried and Roy was in critical condition following a tiger attack during a performance. The tiger, a 7-year-old male named Montecore, was debuting in his first show. And 2 years ago today, Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady became the all-time leader in career passing yardage. Also, some famous folks are celebrating their birthdays today. Time to do the twist. Yep, or let's twist again, because Chubby Checker, still with us, turning 82 years old today. Lindsey Buckingham, guitarist of Fleetwood Mac. Not anymore. He was actually fired from Fleetwood Mac a few years ago, but Lindsey Buckingham, famous for being one of the leaders on Fleetwood Mac, 74 years old today. Tommy Lee, drummer of Motley Crue, turning 61 years old today. Gwen Stefani started off as the lead singer of No Doubt, then had great solo success, and then became, I think, probably even more famous as one of the judges on The Voice. Gwen Stefani turning 54 years old today. Nev Campbell was in many of the Scream movies. Actress is 50 years old today, also turning 50. Terrific actress from Game of Thrones, among other things, Lena Headey. And the thing about it, Lena Headey, she had a small role in one of my all-time favorite movies, Remains of the Day. Remember Remains of the Day, where Anthony Hopkins and Emma Thompson were the stars, and Hopkins played a butler. Lena Headey had a very small part in that movie back in 94, and I still remember it because I thought, man, she stole my heart, I got to tell you, back when I saw it in school when I was at UW-Eau Claire, at the theater at UW-Eau Claire. But Lena Headey, happy birthday to her, 50 years old today. And if you out there, whether in central Wisconsin, whether in northern Wisconsin, southern Wisconsin, wherever in Wisconsin you may be, if you're celebrating your birthday today here on October the 3rd. Happy birthday to you. So that's a look at some of the famous events and the birthdays going on today. And also wanted to mention a few special events going on. It is a Global Smoothie Day. It's also, for this time of year, this one's a good one. It's Look at the Leaves Day. It is also Mean Girls Appreciation Day. And if you're here in central Wisconsin, every other week I bring on the executive director of the Grand Theater, great venue here in Wausau, coming up in the next month or so. Mean Girls, the Broadway traveling play, is coming to the Grand, but it's from, I got to look up why it's Mean Girls Appreciation Day. It is also Boyfriend Day. It is Butterfly and Hummingbird Day. It is Caramel Custard Day. That sounds pretty darn good, doesn't it? It is Family TV Show Day, and that's got to be because of the Andy Griffith Show. If it's not, I'm going to make it because it is the Andy Griffith Show, so it is a Family TV Show Day. It is also Techies Day, and it is Fruit at Work Day. So some special events being celebrated here today. We're going to take a very quick break, just a couple of minutes, and then come back and talk to Civic Media's Jimmy Cuska in a few minutes, talking about high school sports. But right after the break, before we get to Jimmy, we'll be joined from Weatherology by Jennifer Vuchiski to talk about what looks to be another very warm day throughout Wisconsin. You're up north. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow. More to come on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Birthday boy, celebrating number 82, and gotta give man credit. He knows a good thing when he sees it, because that song, The Twist, made it to number one on the charts. And then when an artist gets a number one hit, you think, well, what can I do to back it up? Well, Chubby Checker said, well, you know, The Twist worked so well for me, so Let's Twist Again. And I believe that Let's Twist Again may have peaked at number two. I have to double check that, but it was another big hit. So The Twist followed by Let's Twist Again, and Chubby Checker today celebrating his 82nd birthday. And if Chubby was here in central Wisconsin, and I'm sure many other parts of the state as well, be a beautiful birthday, because the weather is outstanding. I'm looking out the window, in fact, at our new studios on Washington Street as the sun rises. It is a lovely, almost perfect morning, but it's not going to stay this way that much longer. I think I get out there and enjoy it. And to find out about the weather, whether or not we can expect more well above normal temperatures and when we will see some fall-like conditions, we're joined from Weatherology by our meteorologist, Jennifer Vuchiski. And Jennifer, first of all, good morning.
Good morning.
I tell you, yesterday was just a gorgeous day, way, way above normal. Here in Wausau, it was 82 degrees for the high temperature. And again, I think we're supposed to be somewhere in the low 60s this time of year. And I think throughout the rest of the state, it was great as well. It looks like a great start, at least looking out my window. What can we expect around the state today?
Yeah, so actually a similar forecast today compared to yesterday, as high pressure remains in control, sunny skies and highs in the low to mid 80s, upper 80s for southwestern Wisconsin, so that'll be the warmest parts of the state today. It does look like a chance for showers and storms starting to come in for tonight for western and central Wisconsin ahead of that cold front that will start to push through tomorrow. Wednesday looks like at least a slight chance for showers and storms for all. Temperatures drop into the mid to upper 70s for most, a little cooler for west central Wisconsin as that cold front starts out there, getting into the upper 60s for Amory and Baldwin. Then for the second half, the work week continuing to cool as the system pushes through. A slight chance for showers and storms Thursday around Amory and Baldwin, and then also around Waukesha and Milwaukee. Otherwise, sunny skies actually for everyone else in between. Low to mid 70s for the southern half of the state, mid to upper 60s for Oshkosh through central Wisconsin, and then still our coolest spots around Amory and Baldwin, getting down to the low 60s for the afternoon highs. Friday, it does look like a chance for showers and storms across the board. Cooler with a pretty decent drop in temperatures, actually, as that cold front really pushes through. Mid to upper 50s from Oshkosh and the southern half of the state, then low 50s for Wausau and Wisconsin Rapids over towards the west central portions of the state.
Okay, Jennifer, well, we'll enjoy today, and thanks again for the information. We'll talk tomorrow.
problem.
Jennifer Fujisky from Weatherology. Now let's quickly go from, we had news, we went to weather. Now let's turn to a little bit of sports. And from Civic Media, happy to welcome to the program Jimmy Cuskin. Jimmy, first of all, thanks for getting up early and joining me.
Well, I'm already up early because this is the news window for the stations around the state. So I'm already up with you guys. Morning, Chad.
I tell you, though, I mean, I'm wondering if you're like me, used to doing all those sports broadcasts where you become a night person very quickly. The early mornings are weird.
Yeah, being a night owl for sure. This is having to adjust and do news for Civic Media for the western half of the state has been quite the adjustment. But but like you, getting to have the role to be able to do a lot of different things within a radio station or company, it's nothing new for us. So
I know it. You and I both get to put our fingers in a lot of pies these days. But let's talk a little bit about high school sports, because I know you've been around it for a very long time, like I have. And there's some, I think, interesting statewide stories and issues going on right now. And what I wanted to start off with is because I know that you've had so much experience doing games behind the mic, and now you're actually a coach. You've been working with basketball, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yep. For the last 2 years, I've been an assistant coach for basketball in southwestern Wisconsin. It has been a really wonderful experience. And I know that there are broadcasters who will dip into other parts of a sport that they cover or call, you know, so I broadcast a lot of different sports, but having the perspective of coaching has really been wonderful for me as a broadcaster, because it not only has it helped me, you know, recognize things like formations and plays and trends and what teams are currently using at the high school level to help themselves get better, but believe it or not, it's actually helped me understand the rules a lot better just in talking to officials through games, going through the rule books, going through all the WIAA training. Those things have really given me a much firmer grasp on the rules of football. So when I go and call a game, when I'm broadcasting college football on Saturdays, even though the rules are different from college to the high school level, obviously, there's a lot of things that I understand now that I didn't previously, and it makes me sound a heck of a lot smarter when I'm calling a game.
And I think you're a good person to talk about this because of that experience, because the school that you're working with at basketball is having some of the same issues that we're seeing throughout the state. And one thing that I've noticed in recent years that we didn't see very often, if at all, maybe a decade ago, are the teams that are forced to either forfeit a week or to be able to, you know, then continue, hopefully get a little bit more healthy, or some schools that are just forfeiting seasons, not having varsity teams, just playing JV games. Some teams go from 11-player to 8-player. Talk about the numbers that you've seen at basketball, and maybe to broaden it to more of a statewide discussion about, you know, what you're seeing and how it really is something that is occurring for a lot of schools around the state.
It's nothing new in recent years. There's actually been several schools that have canceled entire seasons or gone to play JV only. In fact, my hometown of Cadott in northwestern Wisconsin was one of the first schools to kind of do this. And keep in mind, this is a school that in 1999 had won a state championship, and less than a decade later, they didn't have a varsity program for 2 years because of numbers. So they had to go through it. The school I'm at now, basketball, actually canceled a season back in 2003. The high school I graduated from, Flambeau, which is even further northern Wisconsin, they are actually forfeiting this current season as an 11-player team because they had to make an abrupt shift to play 8-player football, again, due to the numbers issue. Now, where I'm at right now, there is a numbers issue, but I've been really proud of our team, the one that I'm coaching on, and this is very self-serving, but we've had a roster that's peaked at 21 this year, and we've been rolling with most of the year, 19 or 20 student athletes to play every Friday. We keep showing up. We haven't won a game, but we've kept showing up, and that's been really a testament to the guys just sticking with it. But you do see, and Jed, you have highlighted one of the trends in the state really since the COVID-19 pandemic, where it's much more common that you're seeing forfeits in the ledger on Friday and Saturday from teams that just aren't able to go out and field a team. There are schools that are small that are doing this, which I think you expect when it comes to numbers issues. But then you see, you know, a school like a Waukesha school having to cancel because of numbers. You see that, you know, East Troy, which isn't a small city, over in the Milwaukee suburbs, and they're canceling games. And it really starts to make you think, you know, well, what's happening here? What's happening behind the scenes to really cause the numbers issue. And I really think, first of all, the pandemic has made it, I think, a little easier for schools to, you know, handle these abrupt changes. COVID brought, you know, a ton of cancellations. It brought a really, really shifting dynamic week to week for a couple of years where teams had to adapt on the fly. And it became a little easier, I think, for administrators to pick up that game when there's a cancellation. So it became a little more, I guess, for lack of a better term, acceptable that you're able to cancel games. There wasn't as much of a burden on administrators, as difficult as it is to arrange game workers, officials, transportation, mm-hmm. all these other things that go into it. It became a little bit more, I guess, a little easier because now they're used to it a little bit, right? But I think the other thing, and this really ties into the broader perspective of education in Wisconsin as a whole, especially public education, is that in rural areas, declining enrollment has not only become an issue for just funding school districts where they have to pass referendum to even keep the doors open. There were two districts that were saying, well, if we don't pass it, we got to shut our doors. And, you know, these are in the north central part of the state, right? Adams mm-hmm. Friendship and Athens, I believe, are the two that had that. So that's really affected the enrollment too, or affected the participation rates as well in high school sports. Football, most prominent because you need 11 on the field, and football rosters typically require to have, you know, just to, I guess, get through the bumps and bruises of a season, you'd like to have about 10 from each class out. Well, in a lot of high schools, that would be almost your entire, you know, student population. So you see that the trends in enrollment in rural areas, even in the district I live in, that this year, and it's not so long, it's a city of 2,800, but the school this year, if it was playoff eligible, would be in Division 7, the smallest division for 11 player, because the enrollment has dropped so much just in 5 years, where it's gone down almost 50 in high school. So this has become a bigger issue as well for schools beyond how they fund themselves, but also participation for sports. Football, again, sticks out the most because that's where a lot of the cancellations are. There are other sports that do get kind of by the wayside. So it's not just football, but it is certainly most commonly football, just based on the sheer numbers of students who need to participate.
Let me ask you about 11-player versus 8-player for a school like yours, because here in central Wisconsin, one of the schools that I cover, Newman Catholic moved to 8-player a handful of years ago, and it's become a very successful thing for them. And the numbers are almost exactly the same that you talk about at basketball in terms of having about 20, 21 kids that came out this year, basically have about 19 usually in uniform. I know that for some areas, there's still that little bit of in the back of the mind, well, you know, real football is 11 player. I've seen it work so very well here. As part of your program, is there a discussion that say, hey, you know, if we have 20 kids and 8-player, then we got that little bit of a cushion. What's the mindset in maybe a smaller community like that when the thought goes to trying to change from 11 to 8, or if that's even a discussion that's had?
So in a lot of smaller communities, and this has really, really picked up steam the last few years, you really only have a couple of options to viability as a football program. If you stay at 11 and you have low numbers, you're really risking the health and safety of your younger student athletes. And unfortunately, the last 2 years, I've gotten to see this firsthand when you have freshmen and sophomores playing against, you know, 17, 18-year-old boys that are seniors. There's a lot of risk there. This year, we only had, I think, 6 underclassmen, and 4 of them have spent time, missed time because of injuries, right? So in southwestern Wisconsin, for example, a few years ago, 8-player wasn't really a thought because only a handful of schools had really gone to it. So, you know, maybe 3 or 4. So the travel was really tough because you'd have to go to Elkhart Lake Glenbula, or you'd have to go up north to play a Newman Catholic, or go to far northwestern Wisconsin to play a Lakeland school. And the Lakeland Conference really has gone almost wholesale over its 8-player. But having grown up in that conference and seeing the size of the schools doesn't surprise me at all. Those schools were all 3 hours apart anyway, and there wasn't really a lot of paths forward to success in 11-player. So you're seeing now, even here in southwestern Wisconsin, perennial playoff teams that were in the playoffs, deep in the playoffs at state every year. DeSoto is gone to 8-player. Highland is switching to 8-player after this season. Potosi Castle, very successful D7 school the last several years, they're making the switch in 2 years to 8-player. And yes, it has been a discussion where we are at, because your options are co-op, and a lot of communities don't like the idea of a co-op because you lose that community pride thing, right?
Yeah, we're coming up on a hard break. We're planning on one segment. Are you able to stick around after the break?
I am totally able to. I can talk a lot, Chad. You know that.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, continue this conversation with Jimmy Cusk of Civic Media, coming up here on Up North News. It's Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network, normally hosted by Pat Kreitlow, who does such a fantastic job getting our days underway from 6 until 8 a.m. But Pat taking a well-deserved vacation this weekend. I'm Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio out of Wausau. I host a daily show from 8 until 10 a.m. So if you're enjoying what you're hearing now, stick around after 8 o'clock. We'll be back with a couple hours strictly on Bull Falls Radio. And again, you can tune in as well at bullfallsradio.com and on the Civic Media app. We're continuing to talk high school sports with Civic Media's Jimmy Cusk. And before we move on to basketball, we were again finishing up the discussion about the smaller schools dilemma, deciding whether or not to stick with 11-player football, going to 8-player football. You say that there's discussions right now in the school that you're working with as an assistant coach basketball. What is the sense you get, I guess, in this discussion? Do you sense that there would be excitement for it? Do you sense that this would be seen as a step back? What in this discussion, what are you hearing from people? Is tradition very important? Because I think that's one of the big factors. Tradition is important in so many different things, and I think in sports, really, it's important. What are you hearing?
So for us here, I wouldn't say we're having – it's been – I was suggested as maybe something to look at. I would say it's very, very early we're on that. There's not really been a formal thing with it here, but a lot of the school districts around us are having this dilemma right now. And that's why I think that it becomes a lot easier at a school like mine, where you do have, you have had numbers problems historically for decades, really. It's become an easier conversation to have. Like I said, the high school I graduated from in Flambeau, in Northwestern Wisconsin, has recently made the change. There are several districts around where I live that are making that swap. And you hear a lot of the arguments against the move to 8-player. You know, people are, well, what's different? We don't understand 8-player. Is it real football? And for a lot of people that aren't quite sure, I would say that they probably haven't had a lot of exposure to the 8-player football side of things. It is a little different. The field dimensions are a little smaller. I know defensively your responsibilities change quite a bit because there's not going to be safety help over the top a lot of times. And there tends to be more scoring because that's been kind of the trend with it. But other than that, the on-field product, it's football. And it's still very entertaining and very fun to watch. I would say, too, the community pride part of it that you talked about, this is really, I guess, kind of the answer to, if a program is looking at this and they're having the numbers issues, maybe 11-player has gotten to the point where you're non-competitive, you get to retain that community pride part of it. Because when you see a co-op, what happens with the co-op programs is that now you have to double up everything. You know, you have to have 2 homecomings, things like that. There's a lot of transportation costs and issues, not just for games, obviously, but for practices. It makes that the weekly grind a lot different because now you have to suddenly go and travel to another school or another city to have practice or have a film session, et cetera. There's a lot of challenges that come with co-oping, right? Moving to 8-player brings its own challenges. You have to change your field dimensions a bit. There's slightly different roles. There's obviously different playbooks and schemes that you have to come up with. But I would say overall, the conversation with 8-player and a lot of the schools that I've covered, a lot of the coaches and administrators I've talked to, it's become a lot easier because there are so many schools already in it. And the WIAA offers that championship for it. There's a playoff and a championship for it. And I think that has really incentivized a lot of schools. There was a big wave that went over when that tournament series was announced. And now you're starting to see this become a much more popular path for schools to go down, especially in areas like Northwestern, North Central, Northeastern Wisconsin, where there are a lot of smaller schools that make that flip. And now you're seeing it in southwestern Wisconsin with about 10 schools in this quadrant of the state. It hasn't really caught on in the southeastern part of the state where there are more people, but there are also fewer small schools there. But now you've got big parts of the state that have a dozen teams in a geographic area, and it becomes a much more viable path. At last check, Chad, I want to say, I think we're closing in on about 80 schools playing eight-player football. It sounds like a lot, but then you look at 11-player, where not that long ago we were well north of 400. Well, we're around 350 or so right now playing every Friday. So there's definitely been a big, big trend to move to eight-player.
And I do think, to kind of put a bow on it, when you talk about those numbers, and if this continues where we see more 11-player schools go to 8-player, we're going to have to see an adjustment on the divisional formats, because right now with the 7 divisions, with 32 teams in each of the divisions, we are seeing teams that are well under 500, both in terms of their conference and their overall records getting into the playoffs. And on the 8-player side, you're going to see teams that are 5-3 because they play actually one fewer game during the season, not making the playoffs. So I do think that that will be another item that will be put on the WIAA agenda coming up probably pretty soon, because the numbers are not starting to add up as well as they used to when it came to the 7 divisions of 11-player football.
I'll just toss in very quickly that right now with about 358, I think is the number, you have 224 teams that make the postseason. And if you look at all the projections, et cetera, right now, all but a couple of 3-6 teams, 3-6 are going to make the postseason. So 3-6 can get you into the playoffs under the current setup.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be some discussions coming up in the next year or two on that. Also, discussions being held right now when it comes to high school basketball. As we get into October, it's not too long until we start hitting the hardwood, with the first games usually just past the midway point of November. And there was an interesting proposal that came down the line recently concerning a change in terms of some of the rules, including quarters, because wanting to align with the National Federation of High Schools, and apparently their rules are quarters as opposed to halves. We used to be quarters. I'm sure you remember quarters. We broadcast those quarters, and then they went to halves, and now there was a talk about going back to quarters. Could you maybe give a thumbnail sketch on what the idea is and why it's being proposed?
You know, Chad, I remember doing some of those games in quarters when I was working in the Eau Claire area. Some of the rock fights inside of the Big Rivers Conference were games would end 25-18, and that'd be considered high scoring. And I'm sure we've probably called a couple of those same games when an Eau Claire or Chippewa school would hook up against a Wausau school, you know. But, you know, I think the biggest thing of this is that it wasn't brought about as kind of a competitive thing, or, you know, there needs to be a big change to the game. This was brought up almost literally 100% as an administrative deal. The WIAA doesn't have a seat at the table in the NFHS with the rules discussions because they don't conform to the NFHS rule, quarters versus halves. When the WIAA went to halves, it really helped open up the game a bit. It added time to the game. You don't have those four stoppages in each half. I think a lot of people, and I think the coaches survey that went out had something like 62% of coaches like the half system. Don't think there was really a problem with the product in terms of the flow of the games or any big fundamental thing that was broken with it. But because of the administrative part of it, wanting to be part of those discussions going forward, this is something that was brought up. There was actually an amendment brought up to conform all sports, not just basketball, but all sports, to NFHS standards so that the WIAA could be a part of all of those discussions nationally. So it was going to mostly affect basketball, but there were other sports that would have to make some changes as well to conform to the NFHS standards. And I think that the halves versus quarters debate was kind of an unforced error in a way in bringing this up so kind of suddenly and without a lot of preamble to it. But I do know that for the most part, it really just seemed like, oh, you know what, if we administratively do this, then we can have some input on what happens as a whole, rather than just kind of being dictated what to do by the NFHS.
I think I agree with a lot of what you talked about in terms of, you know, the flow of the game. It and also the idea of shortening the games. I mean, I remember back when it was quarters and it was just 8-minute quarters. Boy, those games, a little more than an hour and you're gone. I mean, they were so quick.
I know. You didn't plan to even get popcorn.
Yeah. Exactly right. So I think it's one of those things where, yeah, it sounds like a great idea to have a seat at the table, but at the same time, you don't want to hurt the game itself, and you don't want to hurt it for the kids, because I think the longer games, having two extra minutes in each half, it may not sound like a lot, but it does, I think, add to opportunity as well. So, again, it's one of those where you don't want to, you know, cut off your arm just to make your leg feel better. let's make sure that we do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think really the bigger debate in basketball is going to be around the shot clock, because, you know, remember, it was 7 years ago, they tried to force this through. Like, they mandated it, and all of a sudden, especially smaller schools really pushed back because of the cost of it, and just how it was kind of brought about. It wasn't really a school decision. It was like, you know, this is just something we're going to do because this makes a lot of sense. That was 7 or 8 years ago, right? It was brought back up again. Ultimately did it pass last spring. But I will say this, Chad, I think if you're talking about a fundamental change of basketball, not involving an administrative change, I think the shot clock is inevitable. Personally, when you see the Dakotas, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, they've already gone to it. And a lot of those states are starting this year with it. Like, Minnesota starts full play with it this year. And I know that in Wisconsin, that not only are coaches and the administrators sort of expecting it, but if you go and check the referenda details and some of the new gyms being built, not only in like the suburbs of Madison, like at Oregon, but if you even go to smaller schools, including ours, where we're building a new gym here in Bosqueville after a past referendum, the shot clock is actually being built in as part of it, just sort of expecting that, hey, you know, this is probably coming to us since all the neighboring states have done it. And it's been at the forefront of WIA discussions twice in the last 7 years. So this is something that's going to come, and this will have an impact on high school sports. Now, there's going to be a lot of people against it. There's going to be people for it, obviously. But I do think that it is coming, and I think schools are kind of preparing for that shift, especially at the smaller school level. And I think that'll be a much healthier discussion as we go throughout the next year or two.
Obviously, you've seen a lot of action on the hardwood. You said there'll be people that are for it, maybe people that are against it. What about you? Are you for it or against it? And if there is a shot clock, what do you think the shot clock should be?
So I was initially sort of against it because I thought the halves problem really solved the problems with like stalling and some of the things that a shot clock brings in forcing some tempo and getting kids out and things. I wasn't fully against it, but I saw the cost. I'm like, I don't know if we really need this. And then, you know, just being part, you know, having broadcast college basketball for so long and seeing, you know, how those games handle it, but you almost don't notice a shot clock until it's about to run out. And at the high school level, there's been some tournaments that have gotten a call that go across the borders that have the shot clock. And at the high school level, it's an abrupt change because it's not something you're used to at that level. But overall, I don't see a lot of the harm in it. I think the biggest argument against it is going to be the cost for smaller schools, because when they surveyed this among the membership, a lot of the bigger schools were like, yeah, this is fine. We can handle it. And a lot of the smaller schools, and it wasn't just the cost of installing a shot clock. It wasn't just the hard cost of putting up the 30-second or whatever time they're going to use for this, putting the clock on the wall. It was the fact that you have to train somebody and then use another staff member to operate this on game day, right? You have to have a staff member, volunteer, student actually run the shot clock during a game. And I think that was kind of the hang-up, in that it's already very difficult to find, staff, you know, especially school staff that have 15 million roles that they got to do. And, being a teacher or being somebody that works in a school staff, just how busy that can get when you're asked to do so many of these things above and beyond. I saw that as being more of the issue than it was the actual, you know, the coaching part of it and the game situation part of it, some of the arguments there. I don't know what a good length would be, 30, 35, you know, probably one of those. But I do think that if we got it, I would be more for it now. In fact, I am for it just based on the coaches I've talked to and the fact that people are kind of expecting this to happen anyway. And I think it's really turned since it was brought up, 7 or 8 years ago, that it's turned to be more of a thing that coaches and administrators start to support, kind of anticipating that this is coming down the line eventually, to the point that schools are actually installing them even though it hasn't been passed or isn't on an agenda at the moment, you're seeing them being built at Wisconsin high schools. I think people sort of see this coming, and I think people have accepted that as kind of the reality that we're going to have shot clocks at some point here in Wisconsin.
Jimmy Cusco from Civic Media, longtime play-by-play broadcaster of high school and college sports, assistant coach, basketball, football. Well, thanks for all the information and the time. Make sure you bundle up Friday. Right now it's hot, but I hear it's going to get pretty chilly for the first time on Friday night. So good luck for you and your team on Friday, and thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
For sure. High of 47 in New Lisbon on Friday. So we are
football weather. Football weather.
Football weather, exactly. Take care, Chad.
You bet. Thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy Cusco again joining us from Civic Media. We need to take a timeout. We have one more segment to go. It is Up North News on Civic Media Radio Network. Cool. Little superstition. Stevie Wonder. The time is 7:50 here on this Tuesday morning. I'm Chad Holmes, sitting in for Pat Kreitlow, Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. We got a few minutes to go. If you want to jump in, anything we've talked about today, talked about the issues over at one of the co-hosts for WSAU Radio, about being back on the air. We had a candidate for the 7th Congressional District joining us as well in the first hour. And just had a couple of segments with Jimmy Cusco talking high school sports. Again, our phone number is 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789 to give your thoughts on that or any other issue on your mind here in the last few minutes of the program. I'll be back again tomorrow, one more day, 6 till 8 a.m. on Up North News. Got some ideas on tomorrow, and actually it'll be interesting because I had been basically since last week trying to put together a chat with Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point, because I've had her on my program a number of times. I thought it'd be a good idea to bring her back on to talk about issues going on at the state legislature, and usually it's very easy to get this set up, but it's been a little bit more difficult, and I was kind of wondering why. Then I saw yesterday that Representative Shankland is going to make an announcement today concerning a potential run for Congress. And I got, again, word that the representative will be reaching out to me personally to try and set something up. So I'm hoping that on this program tomorrow, we may have an opportunity to talk to Katrina Shankland, and maybe she'll be a candidate to run against Derek Van Orden in the 3rd Congressional District. I don't know. We just know there's going to be an announcement coming up at 10 a.m. down in Stevens Point today. But my hope is we'll be able to set something up that we'll talk to the representative about the decision to run or the decision not to run, in addition to some of the issues going on down in the state capitol. So again, that's a potential tomorrow, and we'll keep an eye on what the announcement is as well with State Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point. I'm Chad Holmes. Got Sam in the studio. Sam, do you play the Powerball?
The Powerball lottery? No, I can't say that.
Probably
I do.
Probably surprising you to get you on the microphone here.
Oh.
Yeah, the Powerball.
No, can't say
well,
that.
Well, last night we had another Powerball jackpot, and it was not won last night. Yeah, last night the Powerball jackpot has climbed to an estimated $1.2 billion after no players hit it big last night. For those players out there, the winning numbers announced were 12, 26, 27, 43, 47, and the Powerball was 5. The jackpot for the next drawing Wednesday night will be among the largest lottery prizes of all time, behind earlier prizes in the Powerball and Mega Millions games. The prize has grown so massive because there have been 33 consecutive drawings since someone matched all 5 white balls and the Powerball to win the jackpot, dating back to July the 19th. Do you have any idea, Sam, on what the odds are of winning the jackpot in the Powerball?
I know that you have like a better chance of being struck by lightning than winning the lottery, which is, I don't know. Small odds as is.
I think you have a better chance of being, struck by lightning twice than winning the Powerball. The odds are 1 in 292.2 million. So one out of every 292.2 million, you would win the Powerball jackpot. But somebody's going to win it. Somebody's going to win. I very rarely buy lottery tickets. Very, very rarely. Usually it's because somebody in the office will say, hey, we're all getting together to buy lottery tickets. You want to be in? And the only reason I would do it is because I didn't want to be the only person that, if they did by some miracle of miracles win, be the only person that wasn't getting a share of it. That would be the worst thing. So it's worth the $5 or whatever it may be. So, but tomorrow night, if you buy a ticket, if I buy a ticket, it could be worth upwards of $1.2 billion if the person is a sole winner. And then you choose to receive the winnings through an annuity paid annually over 30 years. But winners nearly always pick the cash option, which Wednesday night's drawing would be an estimated $551 million. So again, if you wanted one time only, just take the one check, you would probably get somewhere north of $550 million. So if you are a lottery player, good luck. You're going to need it with that one in $292.2 million jackpot. Somebody else who's looking to win is the Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. Again, we have CBS News coming up at the top of the hour. I'm sure one of the stories, again, will be the potential vote to remove the Speaker of the House. The thing about this that I know there's some folks who are kind of, you know, enjoying the fact that the MAGA bunch are going up against each other in the House, because Kevin McCarthy's no center person. He is a conservative. And the idea, though, of Matt Gaetz leading this charge, in a sense, is a little depressing, because when we have this form of government, a representative democracy, you want people who are serious people, maybe the best and the brightest. And I know that we have come a long way from anywhere close to the best and the brightest in recent years, but the idea that we see constantly, we're going to hear, I pretty sure we're going to hear a soundbite from Matt Gaetz coming up in the national news in just a few minutes. But the idea that Matt Gaetz is up there talking about how if Kevin McCarthy survives the vote, that means he's serving the Democrats, which is absolute garbage. Kevin McCarthy is not serving the Democrats. The idea that Matt Gaetz feels like the far right of the party, which even in the Republican Party is not a majority of that party, that somehow if they are not listened to by the Speaker, he is not serving the Republican Party. It's garbage. It's plain and simple garbage. And that's going to be an interesting story to watch, because should the Republicans decide to throw Kevin McCarthy overboard when it comes to the speakership, we've already seen how difficult it is for that party to come together behind a candidate. Kevin McCarthy kind of dodged history. You don't see somebody lose votes 1, 2, 5, 6, 10 times, ultimately more than 15 votes back in January when Kevin McCarthy was elected to the speakership. I mean, he just kept fighting and fighting. You got to give him credit for that. It was embarrassing for him, because you're not supposed to be voted down by your own party so many times. But in the end, he got the votes, and now he's got to do it all over again. But say he's thrown overboard. Who the heck on the Republican side of the aisle is going to get the needed votes to become the Speaker of the House? I know that on the right-hand side that they are looking at Jim Jordan as their hero. You talk about a person that most Republicans, even conservative Republicans, would not want to see as the face of their party going into a presidential election year. I do not see that happening. It could be, again, a situation where the House of Representatives comes to a screeching halt if, as we see in the next couple of days, Kevin McCarthy perhaps removed from the speakership. So again, that's one of the interesting stories to keep an eye on. Hey, thanks again to my guest here this morning, as we had Elsa Dursero, the 7th District Congressional candidate, joining us in the first hour. Elsa Duranso, I should say. And then Jimmy Cuska from Civic Media up here in hour number 2. Hey, I'll be back tomorrow. Also, I'll be back with the Chad Holmes Show on Bull Falls Radio coming up in a few minutes. Have yourselves a great rest of your Tuesday, and keep it here on Civic Media.